Welcome, folks, to another Patriots preview. I'm back. I am Matt Dolliff. I'm back here with Alex Barth of 98.5thesportshub.com. What's up, Alex?
Just the usual. Trying to watch game tape, but all 22 game pass has been a little stingy, so.
I see you're blocking out the sunlight. Alex does not like seeing the sun. he prefers the darkness. That's where he was born is.
I get enough sun on Sundays.
I was born in it. All right. So, we're coming off a win, a nice win, I thought, for the Patriots. They're 1-0, and I thought it was a great, great day for the Patriots coaching staff. I was saying going into the season, I feel a little bit validated that, guys, they still have Bill Belichick. I know that there might be games where they just come up short because they don't quite have the horses talent-wise, but they still have this Belichick coaching staff. They're not going to beat themselves. They're going to be ready to play. The question is, will the execution be there? And I think for the most part, the execution was there. Maybe just a few small things they have to clean up and a few question marks on the roster itself. But the coaching's there. They're going to be in these games. There's going to be rare instances where they beat themselves and they get blown out in the coaching department. That tends to happen, but if it's Bill Belichick going up against someone like Brian Flores with his lack of experience, it's a huge mismatch. And I think you touched on it on the website with the Patriots offseason blueprint, building this throwback roster and this power running game that we saw. And I thought it looked really good. I mean, what's your big takeaway from the game?
Yeah, it's the 2001 Patriots starring Cam Newton as Antoine Smith, but and that's obviously a little bit extreme. No, I thought, well, first off, and you wrote about it, and like you just said, to not have a preseason, to have a shortened training camp, so much roster turnover, to come out and not commit a single what's the word I'm looking for?
Penalty, like turnover?
Penalty procedural.
Yeah. No false starts, no right. Illegal motions or anything like that.
12 men on the field, illegal shift with all the movement they're doing. There was none of that. There were three penalties. They were all pass interference. Two of them, I think, were questionable. So to not have any of that, there were no bad timeouts. They had all three timeouts at the end of the first half to go on that drive, set up a field goal chance, which they ended up missing. And they only used one timeout in the second half. And the next play, they put the ball in the end zone for the touchdown that put the game away. So to see just how ready this team is, the talent in itself is going to be an issue. This is a less talented roster than they've had probably any other year under Belichick except for 2000, his first year here. But, you know, in terms of discipline and coaching, they're ready, like you said. And I think what we saw is we can put the tank for Trevor discussion to bed. There's that one guy who comments on every single Sports Hub tweet, hashtag tank for Trevor. I think he added / Justin since then.
That man has been muted. Has he?
He's, I still
yelling
see him
into the void because he's.
I would hope. Seriously, every tweet, go check it out. I would hope we can put that to the side now because, like I wrote about in my season preview, Bill Belichick to me is worth 6 wins just walking in the door. He shows up. He parks his car at one Patriot place, and the Patriots are going to win 6 games. I don't think he has it in him to throw games. It's like we saw with Michael Jordan in The Last Dance, right?
That's not the second episode.
I don't think he has it mentally to do that. So we can throw that out the window.
It's literally not even worth a breath.
Right.
So we can just say that. I think he's worth more than 6 wins. I think they're gonna win 10 games. I thought the 7-9, 8-8 talk was just crazy. I don't care what talent they have. I think Bill is gonna coach them over 500. I'd say 10 wins minimum.
When I say walking in the door gives them 6 wins, what I'm saying is that if you give him a roster of all UDFA rookies, like give him the FCS All-Star team, right? That's the tier one double-A college football, and I think he gets that team up to 6 games. That's what I mean by he wins 6 games walking in the door. And like you just said, I think 9 or 10 is more realistic. Look, the Dolphins are the Dolphins. I think they're slept on a bit. I think that they're a better team than people give them credit for. Certainly, they're not the Jets. The Jets are dregs, okay? The Jets are bad. The Dolphins have some things going for them. Flores is inexperienced, but he's a good coach. They do have some standout talent on both sides of the ball, especially defensively. But, you know, the Seattle's another kind of test, like Josh McDaniels told us yesterday. This is, you're going up against the best of the best, you know, one of the best of the best in Seattle. So cautiously optimistic is where I'm at. They showed me nothing where it's time to worry. I didn't see anything that stood out that was like, whoa, this team's going to be great. Because at the end of the day, it was the Miami Dolphins. But TCOB, they took care of business. That's what that game should have been. It's what they did. There's no red flags or anything like that.
Exactly. Yeah, I think cautiously optimistic is a good way to put it. And I think coming out of the game, there's no big concerns, but much bigger test coming up with Seattle, especially I think in the coaching department. I know we like to rag on Pete Carroll just for the way he talks and the way he acts and all that stuff. He seems like a cheerleader for his team, but he is a good coach, good defensive coach, and he won the last time they played. I don't know how much of a bearing that game 4 years ago will have on this one, but it is the same coach and quarterback against Bill Belichick and Cam Newton, and I think that sort of closes the gap. I think there's going to be games where Belichick is clearly way ahead of the other coach, and Cam Newton is going to be good enough that they have a clear advantage in the department of coach quarterback. But I think Seattle closes the gap there because they have Russell Wilson, who's you could argue that he's still the best quarterback in the league, even over Patrick Mahomes. But, you know, I'd say he's top two, top three in the league. And he obviously lit it up against the Atlanta Falcons last week. But I don't think the Falcons have the secondary that the Patriots have. So we can sort of get into that game now. I think the marquee matchup is really Bill Belichick versus Pete Carroll. We're going to see who's more prepared, who's going to be better in the situational stuff. And, I mean, you could give Belichick the edge there, but Pete Carroll is at home. He does sort of know what he's doing. I know we always like to point to the biggest mistake in NFL history, which was not giving Marshawn Lynch the ball in that, you know, that game, that one game. But I think the Seahawks are going to be more ready to go than the Dolphins. I think they're going to be a little more disciplined than the Dolphins, and I think they're going to be more ready defensively. They have the talent defensively, I think, to defend this new look Patriots offense. That is, if the Patriots don't have a completely new game plan and they decide to go out with this power running game and have Cam Newton run the ball 15 times. Can they run it against the likes of Jamal Adams, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, Bruce Irvin? They have a good front seven, good linebackers, and I think that's going to be a big key for the offense.
Patriots. Yeah, I mean it's going to be tough. Just to kind of go back to a couple things you said in terms of Pete Carroll having his team prepared. It was interesting that he said, I think it was yesterday, it was either on Monday or Tuesday, he came out and said that they want to run the ball more, that they don't want to throw the ball as much as they did in that win over Atlanta. They threw the ball 35 times. I think they called a couple more than 35 passing plays because I think Russell Wilson scrambled once or twice. But that's, to me, the strength of that team. I'm not wowed by their offensive line. I mean, it's fine. It's hardly not one of their strengths. Same for the running backs, Carlos Hyde, Chris Carson. I mean, those are heard of them names, but I don't think either one of those guys is playing at a particularly high level. And then you have guys like DK Metcalf, Greg Olsen, even, you know, a former Patriot and Philip Dorsett who had a pretty good game week one. That's the strength of the team. It's Russell Wilson and those receivers. So to see Pete Carroll come out and say, I'm going to run it, is he overcompensating for Super Bowl 49? Is that what he's doing? Like, he should throw the ball, Pete. Now's your chance.
I guess he's already lost.
Right. And so that stood out to me. But Josh McDaniels is kind of saying the same thing, that we did what we needed to do to beat the Dolphins. We're going to do each week what we need to do to win. And the Patriots have always been a game plan defense. Is it possible they're going to be a game plan offense this year? Because like you said, I mean, they got run stoppers galore there in Seattle. And Cam Newton's still bigger than all of them. I think he's bigger than Wright, I believe. But, you know, they could come out and run the ball 15 times. And I don't think it would go as poorly as it might look on paper. But the strength is throwing the ball. So we may see kind of a switch here, and that's what's going to be interesting, is how much is each coach saying we're going to totally flip our game plan on its head? How much of that is the truth, and how much of that is just putting that out there so the other side hears it and the other side has to think about it?
Yeah, I think one question I have for the Patriots offense moving forward is what happens when a defense forces them to throw. I mean, I think we sort of saw it against Miami. We saw it on that first drive of the third quarter. I don't know if you went back and watched it, but they really started loading up the box down low. They put up almost all 11 guys down low to say, we're not going to let you run all over us anymore. And Cam Newton threw the ball all the way down the field. He hit Julian Edelman a couple times. And they almost did it on their next drive, the one that ended with the N'Keal Harry fumble, which was highly unfortunate. But Cam Newton was efficient and mistake-free throwing the ball, which I thought was – I was more impressed than a lot of people like to give him credit for throwing the ball, because I mean, we got to see more explosiveness out of the passing game, which I think brings us back to N'Keal Harry, who I didn't think had a good game, even though he did make 5 catches on 6 targets, which is good. I like the efficiency there, But even just beyond the fumble, the play where he caught a screen pass and then got bodied by like a 5'11" cornerback, that just can't happen. And so I think the question is, what happens when – just say for argument's sake that the Seahawks load up in the box and they put all this high-end talent in the front seven down low, and Jamal Adams is swarming the football and tackling Cam Newton on his own, and they can't run the ball like they did last week. What happens when they need a big play in the passing game? Because we know the Seahawks can come up with that in a big situation with their receivers and Russell Wilson throwing the deep ball. So I want to see if Seattle tests them in that department and see it says, Cam, you got to throw it to N'Keal Harry. N'Keal Harry, you need to body our defensive backs, and we don't think you can do it. So I want to see them prove that they can do that. This week, I want to see them prove that.
So I was kind of looking at that question. It's funny you bring that up. I had the same question through a different lens in that outside of that one drive that was 31 seconds at the end of the first half against Miami, the Patriots never really had to throw the ball, right?
Yeah.
They never had their backs against the wall. We need to get down the field. We need to get down the field quickly. We need to get down the field efficiently.
I don't know if I said this, but yeah, what happens when they have to play from behind too?
Right. It's two different questions, but they kind of have the same answer, right? Yeah. What happens when the opponents stack the box? Because that's going to happen if they get up. The Patriots are going to run the ball. The opponent's going to stack the box. But also, what happens if they get down 10-0? What happens when it's a 10-point game and there's 5 minutes to go? Can they push the ball vertically down the field like they did under Tom Brady? And they're not going to be able to do it like they did under Tom Brady, obviously. But that's where I look at a guy like Tamir Bird, who played more snaps than any wide receiver for the Patriots in week one and didn't receive a target. Is he out there to be a decoy? Is he out there when kind of the pedal has to go to the metal to push the ball down the field? Will that be his job? Is that where Devin Asiasi gets used more and gets targeted? Because they went mostly with Ryan Izzo, the blocking tight end. He played more snaps than any skill position player on the Patriots in week one. So I think we're going to see that this week. I think we will see, because that is the one question, the one big question mark I walked away from after the Miami game. They looked good throwing the ball. I actually think N'Keal Harry had a couple unfortunate moments that like just visually were bad. I think, and we talked about this last week, right, with his separation and how the Patriots used him last year when they were fighting him. I actually thought that they had him play to his strengths in week one. There were a couple of really tight windows where he outbodied the corner. He got the better physical positioning and made the catch, especially on slant routes. That's what the Patriots need from him. That's what you want to see from him. And I thought, you know, the fumble's certainly not great, but I thought that was more of a nice play by the defender than a bad play by N'Keal. It was a rookie mistake by a guy who's played less than 10 NFL games. And yeah, getting bodied by the corner is unfortunate, but that was one play. I thought, and I know you had him in your downs in the column, and I thought so too, just watching the game live, when
it just
I went
had,
back,
he
through,
had to be
right. And you know what? There wasn't a lot of negatives in that game, but when I went back through and watched it, I saw more positives than negatives out of him. So I think between him and Demir Bird, it's going to be interesting to see what they do when they actually have to push the ball. Does Julian Edelman play more? He only played 56% of the time. 22 of their dropbacks, he was on the field for 20 of them. So he's kind of a tell, which lets me know they're not going to be too secretive about their passing game. You're going to kind of know when it's coming, and they're going to have to beat teams with the execution of it. That scares me a little bit. It scares me a little bit with what Cam Newton's done in the past, because he can get bold and he can take some risks. He didn't do it. He was very safe with the ball on Sunday, which was encouraging. But I want to see what the passing game looks like when the other team knows it's coming, because we didn't see that on Sunday, and I think we're going to see it this week.
Yeah, Cam tends to like double pump a lot and sort of telegraph his throws himself. So, I mean, I feel like it's sort of easy to see if you have an experienced defense, which we are going to see on Sunday with the Seahawks.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. I mean, the Dolphins did have a young secondary. So, I mean, I don't know if they just didn't have the savvy to see what was coming with Cam in the passing game. But, yeah, you mentioned all the guys that I want to see more of. I want to see Devin Asiasi up the seam. I know that's probably too much to ask for a rookie, but I do like that they put Asiasi out there a little bit. He was the only other tight end they had, but they had the confidence to put him out there as a blocker. So I want to see what he can do as a pass catcher as soon as this week. And with Demir Bird, I mean, he a lot of his snaps were just a product of the running game and how many running plays they did. And he was the number two receiver of choice when they ran 21 personnel in the two receiver sets. And so he was out there as a blocker a lot. And it seems like they're just trying to lighten Julian Edelman's workload. But to your point, when Edelman's out there, it's pretty much going to be a passing play unless they're running the jet sweep that somehow Dolphins weren't ready for. And yeah, I just think they're going to need to get more out of Bird as a receiver. He wasn't even targeted on Sunday. And if he's going to be your number three receiver, you're going to need more out of him. And that, I hope we don't come out of this game on Sunday saying they need to make a move for another receiver, because it's the same old song and dance from the last couple of years. And I don't know. I don't think Tamir Bird's never really come to fruition anywhere. He didn't really emerge in Carolina. And I remember when he was getting a lot of attention for his performance in camp, there were Carolina guys tweeting like, oh, I see New England is finding out how good Tamir Bird looks in August. And so I don't know. We got to see more out of him than just blocking. Like if the guy's just going to be a blocker, like just get someone off the practice squad. Don't like make this guy your number three receiver in the offense.
Yeah. There's that one guy every year too, that was really good before they put the pads on. If you remember Maurice Harris last year, right, the wide receiver from Washington. I think he's back in Washington now, but it's really easy to be quick and fast and shifty when the contact's limited and you're not weighed down by 20 pounds of equipment. The second you're wearing full pads and guys can tee off on you at the line, that changes a lot. That's what happened to Harris last year. Everybody was in love with him in OTAs. Suddenly the pads came on and he disappeared, because it's just, you know, some people are better flag football players than real football players. It's not
Kobe Myers,
not,
too.
I would say Jacoby Myers was more just his inexperience got exposed, because I didn't even think he looked that explosive when the pads were off. But this is, you know, those quicker guys who it's a lot easier to stop on a dime when you don't have 20 pounds of equipment carrying your momentum, right? Yeah. So, you know, for a guy like Maurice Harris, for a guy like Tamir Bird, that's going to change when the pads come on. So that's what we saw. But the fact they're putting him out there means that they trust him to be able to contribute something. Again, he played more snaps than any other wide receiver. That's not nothing. Julian Edelman might be the best blocking wide receiver in the league, and I get they're going to try to keep him healthy. But if the plan was to run the ball as much as they did, right, I think he'd be out there more, especially when it's runs to the outside, because we've seen a wide receiver block can turn a 5-yard run into a 50-yard run like that. So, and Edelman's done that. So to not see him out there when they're running the ball as much as they were, I think there's something with Bird. I wonder how much of it, and this was actually the whole game plan, I wonder how much of it they just wanted to put on tape so teams have to respect it, right? Cam Newton runs the ball 15 times. We've talked about sustainability pretty much since that game ended. But once you put that on tape, you still get the effect of it without Cam carrying the ball 15 times, because now teams have seen you can do it and they have to be ready for it. He can only run the ball 4 or 5 times now, but teams still have to respect it. You put it out there once again, maybe in November, just to remind everybody, hey, we can do this. You got to watch out for this. But you don't have to do that every game to get the effect. That's the beauty of Cam Newton as a runner. I wonder if with Tamir Bird, we're kind of seeing the same thing where, yeah, he's totally a decoy. You see him out there, he's just in to run block and all that, and we're not going to throw him the football. He'll play 88% of snaps. We don't want to count him in the passing game. And teams, you know, they see that run, they creep up, they bring the safeties up, and then when you need it, and this goes back to kind of how we started this conversation, what do the Patriots do when their back's against the wall? Tamir Bird's a run blocker. He's a run blocker. He's a run blocker. So here comes the safety, close to the line. All of a sudden, you're down by 7 with a minute and a half to go. Boom, play action over the top. Where's that safety? His eyes are in the backfield. He's in the box looking for the run. Tamir Bird's one-on-one with a corner on the outside. He's got the speed advantage. Cam hits him over the top. Boom. You're not going to necessarily see that all the time. I'm not saying Tamir Bird's going to go for 5 catches and 200 yards, but based on what I saw on Sunday and the tendencies historically of the Patriots, it kind of – we talk about all the time, oh, they're setting up the play action deep shot. We're setting up the play action deep shot. Normally we talk about it in the context of a couple of drives, right? Self-contained within one game. I think we're looking at that same thing, but spread out over multiple games. They are setting up the deep play action in the passing game, but they're doing it over the course of a month instead of, you know, a quarter and a half.
Yeah, I think that just they wanted to get out of that game healthy, intact, and just do what they know they can do well, and they're going to install more into the passing game as the season goes along. And just one more thing on the passing game before we move on is that this is why I said I think they're going to be better offensively than they were the last 2 years with Tom Brady. Cam Newton is on the same page with his receivers. He's on the same page with Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels. The continuity on the offensive line, I think the running game is going to be way better than it was last year. And they've added upside at tight end, and hopefully N'Keal Harry can be even better than what he's shown so far. I still need to see him take a step forward. I think they're going to be better than the last 2 years because of what we're seeing. I think everyone's on the same page, and it's a more functional operation. Nobody's saying that Cam Newton is better than Tom Brady. You know, this is just, it's right. Just, I think the overall operation is smoother. So,
and I would add to that. No, and I think it's a really good thought. And I'd add to that, I wrote this in the column about roster building on Sunday. Last year, the Patriots, they wanted to have that old Patriots identity. If you have six or seven players catching the ball each game and you're just 5 yards, boom, 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 supplementing that with a strong running game in between, but they didn't have the receivers to do it. They didn't have David Andrews. I don't think Sony Michel was fully healthy. Like, what their identity was and what they wanted it to be were two very different things. And that'll absolutely kill a football team. It has killed a lot of talented football teams. And that was kind of the case. Even when they won the Super Bowl in 2018, they sort of just accepted their identity had to be different and changed it late in the year, right? Remember that? Yeah. And they lost those two games. They lost to Miami. They lost to Pittsburgh. And they were really fighting their identity. They came to terms with it. And they went back to fighting their identity in 2019. This is a team that I think the identity, the team they want to be and the roster they have – match up perfectly. And that's not something to sleep on. You know, people think it's just common sense that you build a roster for the game you want to play. That's just us having privileged and experiencing Bill Belichick. He always built his teams like that. We consider that standard operating procedure. That's not how it always goes in the NFL. There's a lot of times teams get built, and whether it's coaching changes, quarterback changes, injuries, whatever, teams don't play to their identity. This is a Patriots team that is 100%. They know who they are. They know what they're about, and they are fully behind it. They have the players to make it happen. We haven't seen that in 2 years. And yeah, like you just said, everybody's on the same page. Everybody, not only does everybody know what they're doing, here's what I'll add to what you said. Everybody can do what they're being asked to do. That wasn't the case last year. That was readily apparent on Sunday, and I think it's going to be apparent throughout the season.
Yep, good start. We'll see if the talent's there. I think that's going to be a question that we're going to ask all season. But I mean, we'll see if the talent's there. But the execution is on point. Everyone's on the same page, which I like. Good start for that. One more topic to get into about the Seahawks before we call it a day here is this game is strength versus strength in every sense in the word in terms of the Seahawks wideouts versus the Patriots secondary, and I think it would be a mistake for Pete Carroll to run the ball too much, thereby taking the ball out of the hands of his best player and one of the best players in the league. And with his weapons, I think if any, you don't want to throw on that secondary all day if you don't have the talent. But the Seahawks have talent; they have the ability to match up with the Patriots secondary. So that, I think it's a big question for this game: who gets Tyler Lockett? Who gets DK Metcalf? Who gets Greg Olsen? Probably Jawan Williams based on what we saw. And how do they match up? And who is Jonathan Jones going to be matching up against? Where, how does Jason McCourty factor into this? And I think that the depth of the Seattle wideouts is going to be a huge test for the secondary. It's a big test that they get all season. And I want to see how that matchup turns out. So do you have any initial thoughts? What do you think is going to happen there?
Yeah, how they handle Philip Dorsett's going to be really interesting because it's a guy they know pretty well. I think that's right. I mean, if I'm looking at it, if I'm just breaking it down off the top of my head, and I haven't gone back and watched the Seahawks yet, unfortunately, because again, Game Pass. But I think I would put Gilmore on Metcalf. I think that's when you talk about strength on strength. That's literally strength on strength. That's two guys who are both going to try to win the game in a physical manner. Gilmore talks about his technique all the time, and of course it's impeccable, but he'll punch you in the face at the line of scrimmage, and that's part of what makes him so good. And DK Metcalf can throw a punch himself, so that's a heavyweight fight on the outside.
Yeah, Metcalf is a freak. I say, punch him in the face and make him run a route is the question with Metcalf, because he can body a receiver who's less athletic than him, but if the guy's matching him in terms of route running and strength and all that stuff, that's where you can really test him. So sorry to interrupt.
So the other thing I was going to say is I wouldn't be surprised if Gilmore's not working out or they want to throw him a different look. If you see Jason McCourty on Metcalf and they put one of those big physical hybrid linebacker safeties in for help, a guy like an Adrian Phillips or a Terrence Brooks, who one is going to have the experience, not that Gilmore doesn't, but two is, again, going to be able to throw that punch back. This is a heavyweight fight in terms of defending DK Metcalf. You're going to be sore the next day, so that's a big one. Tyler Lockett, actually, I think that – let me walk back right. I said, I think Tyler Lockett gets J.C. Jackson. I think you might see a move to Dorsett sometimes when he's in the game with his speed, but I think you need to be careful about Lockett. He's an incredibly efficient player. So Greg Olsen's a guy, I think. Do you put Jawan Williams on him? I think physically he's the best matchup, but Williams is really does not have a lot of NFL experience under his belt. And Greg Olsen's a longtime veteran. He's seen and done everything. I wonder, again, if you go with a guy like an Adrian Phillips or you go with a guy like Terrence Brooks, the one other thing we might see the Patriots do, if Olsen starts killing them, and, you know, he wasn't a major part of the offense for the Seahawks in their opener. 4 catches, 24 yards. He did catch a touchdown, but they're focusing more on the wide receivers. But if Olsen really does start killing them, I wonder if Gilmore goes inside on Olsen. And again, you get Jason McCourty on the outside with safety help over the top on Metcalf, and you see Lockett and J.C. Jackson being the matchup on the other side. You could see Jonathan Jones on Dorsett. I think Dorsett's going to kind of be dictated by who else is in the game. Is he in with Lockett? Are they going 3 wide receivers? Is it a 2 wide receiver set? How's that going to look? But yeah, there's a million different ways they can play this. I'm not saying it's not like one's better than the other. It kind of, the game is going to dictate how they handle it and what the Seahawks want to give them. We heard last week so much from the Patriots that adjustments were going to be the key. In week one, you don't know what the other team's going to do. This is going to be another game where they're going to have to identify what the Seahawks are doing early and adjust quickly to not let it get out of control, because there's so many different ways the Seahawks can attack them, which wasn't the case last week. It was Devontae Parker. That was going to be the point of attack. You knew it. This week, there's so many different ways the Seahawks can attack them. They have to figure that out quickly and balance themselves to take that away.
I agree. Yeah, I think that's why we might see an early score from the Seahawks, and everyone on Twitter will poop their pants, and we'll talk about.
Don't stop Miami now!
I told you! Go I told Miami you! Now. I told you, Mavs 5-11. I told you, Mike, they suck. All right, I don't know what came over me there, but yeah,
that was awesome. I just got to see the Mavs voice in person. Did you see him laughing at when they first started talking about Brady's game on Monday? Maz, what did you think? And he just starts doing the laugh, and I could have sworn it was you. It really was spot on.
Yeah, I got the Maz laugh down. I've listened to those guys all too much over the last 10 years. No, I've listened to them an appropriate amount.
You should consider doing one for a Bucks-Saints game. Whether it's in addition to the Pats, or if there's like a kind of not heavy storyline Pats game, I think one for a Bucks game would be hilarious.
Maybe mix that in. Yeah, maybe mix that in. Smash success on the return of the Felger and Maz Perrys. And I'm very happy with where our Patriots coverage is going. We're in a groove. Season has started. We got a football guru in yourself, and we have Ty Anderson kicking ass on the Celtics coverage and Bruins coverage, as he always does. He's back covering the Patriots more. We're going to have all kinds of football stuff for you moving forward. It's an exciting season, I think, very compelling. And, I think just one more thing about the defense. I wonder if we're going to see a lot of dime defenses and seven defensive backs, because I think they're really going to want to slow down that Seahawks passing game. But that's going to be the most fascinating matchup of the weekend, is the Seahawks receivers versus the Patriots defensive backs. And then, of course, the chess match between Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll. And I just have a feeling it's going to go down to the wire no matter what happens, whether it's high scoring, low scoring, someone who's going to blink first, who's going to make a mistake at the end. And that's how I feel like it's going to go. Do you have any final thoughts quickly?
Yeah, real quick here. I don't know. Did you see the promo for the game they ran during Sunday Night Football this week?
I don't remember what happened.
So they ran a promo, like, during this week's Sunday Night Football, they run a promo for the next game, and they're billing it as the rivalry. And they showed the Malcolm Butler interception, Tom Brady celebrating on the sideline, and then the questionable pass interference between Earl Thomas and Rob Gronkowski. Ooh. And I saw some people say this on Twitter, and it kind of hit me at the same time. They're billing this as the rivalry, and there's all these historical moments, and that's all well and good. None of those four players in the promo will be playing in the game on Sunday unless the Patriots get really cool and sign Earl Thomas in the next couple days. So I do love the Patriots-Seahawks rivalry. When I was doing a protected rivalry thing, like a college-style protected rivalry thing for the NFL back in March, I had the Patriots and Seahawks as my protected rivalry, the I-90 rivalry. I think it's great, but if we want to call this a rivalry, and I think we can, this is a new chapter in that rivalry on Sunday.
Totally new chapter. And this Patriots-Seahawks is an example of why I wish all the division winners in each conference played each other every year. Imagine if we had Patriots-Seahawks every year, or almost every year. That would have been
That's
amazing.
What I was advocating for back in March. Was essentially, I don't know if I just broke out or you stopped talking. What I advocated
broke up for a second again, but that's okay.
Okay. That's what I advocated for back in March, was that there should be one game in between the conferences, whether it's Jets, Giants, Steelers, Eagles, Patriots, Seahawks, Cowboys, Texans. when they're adding that 17th game, how are they going to add to the schedule format? Give me one cross-conference protected rivalry that happens every year, and then the years where they're supposed to play in the regular schedule thing, they play twice. So every 4 years, we'd actually get double Patriots Seahawks. That's what I'd like to say.
I would enjoy that, but until then, we just have to deal with this once every 4 years leap year type of thing with Patriots Seahawks. Looking forward to it.
It
thanks again.
That's funny. It is in the leap years.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, true. Well, we got more football coming this weekend. I think it's going to be a great game. It'll be fun to watch, fun to talk about, and we'll have plenty of coverage for you post-game and in the days afterwards. He is Alex Barth. I am Matt Dolliff. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week.